And here on KBRB, it is time for our open line program, and we're joined by representatives from the Sandhills Care Center, Administrator Penny Jacobs and board member Sean Furno. And just giving an update, the care center's been on our news a lot lately as you face a nursing shortage, which is a nationwide shortage, and the finances from having to use agency nursing that's starting to take its toll on the nursing home's bottom line. So we wanted to start with Penny and Sean, and give a little history of the facility here in Ainsworth. Was opened in the 60s and was operated privately for the most part up until 2014, when the private management company that was running the nursing home left the area, and the facility went into receivership. And at that time, when the facility closed in 2014, the city and county began working together along with the North Central Development Center to try to obtain the building from the current owner, and then try to get an agreement in place to reopen the facility. Facility reopened in 2016, and with some support from the city and county, basically operated at break-even or better up until the COVID pandemic, and that's where we started to see somewhat of a change. And it basically starts with the staffing situation, where nurses were in short order after and during the pandemic, received some pandemic funding to help get you through the height of COVID, and since that time the staffing has not returned. So, you know, Sean, as a board member, you know, you're on the Ainsworth City Council, and the council appoints a member to the Care Center board. You know, from your perspective being on the board, you've gotten to see a little bit about how the funding from the Care Center went from, hey, we're breaking even or pretty close to that each month, and went 2 years without having to ask the city or the county for the contributions that they had agreed to make and were basically self-sustaining, to go from that to we are paying $150,000 a month for agency staffing, and that just completely wrecks your bottom line. So from your board perspective, just talk about what you've seen in just this last basically year and a half, and even this last just year with the staffing situation.
Well, basically, we see the numbers fluctuate depending on how much agency nursing we have, but the COVID has been the real main problem that I've seen. And until we
start working again, so that's a perfect for that to happen. Hold on one second. Let me see if I can get this. How about there we go. I think we're working. Start again. Again, just like I said, from your board perspective of what you've seen just in the last year on the staffing situation. Sorry about that. Hopefully the equipment's working now.
Basically what I've seen is I've seen fluctuations in expenses of agency nurses coming and going and trying to have the appropriate staff we need to be self-sustaining. And until we can get fully staffed out there, I think it's going to be a struggle, but I believe it'll go away as well as COVID.
Well, you know, we've watched, I go to every care center board meeting and have watched as the, you know, we get the financial numbers each month and how the facility is doing on its profit and loss statement, revenue versus expenses. And, you know, residents in the nursing home is basically been pretty steady between 18 and 25 since it reopened, and currently I would know it was at 20 as of the last board meeting. You know, it's definitely something that no one necessarily ever wants to have to be in that situation, but we all know it's a reality. And for the families that make the decision to have a loved one become a resident of the Sandhills Care Center or of any facility, just being able to have a facility in the community and to be able, if you live in the same community, to be able to be there every day, to have that facility for the resident in the community where they lived, where they called home, where they ran a business, where they were in the, you know, whatever it may be, just that peace of mind to know that even if you need those services, that you're in your community.
Absolutely. All the residents out there, in my opinion, they've done their time here. They've paid their taxes here. I believe that they have a right to stay here. And I believe that as a community, we need to pull together and make sure that we do what needs to be done to keep these residents here. I personally know most of the residents that are out there from this area, and they've all done good things and helped out in the community. And we've got to pull together and figure out what we need to do as a community to keep the doors open to survive COVID.
You know, and even we've also that have actually come from outside of the community because the facilities in their community have closed. And, you know, every week those family members are making how appreciative they are that they don't have to drive any further than to come to Ainsworth to see their loved ones. So, it's a combination of that as well.
Well, that's a really good point, Penny. You know, when we talk about that the nursing home right now is struggling financially, it's certainly not the only nursing home that's in this boat. It is basically every rural nursing home that doesn't have, you know, 50 or 60 residents that are all private pay like some of your larger facilities. These either small for-profit or the smaller not-for-profit community-run facilities are just, it's all they can do to keep the doors open. So Ainsworth is not unique in the situation of the struggles we're seeing here in these last few months. In fact, Ainsworth probably has weathered this better than many other facilities, because we've already seen facilities in Valentine, in Ravenna, in Mullen, in other different places. And it's 4 to 5 or more per year that starts, you know, the private facilities first. They wind down and close because they are not, you know, in a for-profit business. If you're not making a profit, you're not going to be in that business very long. You know, then you see the community facilities that are trying to hang on. They've got, you know, they're not in it for the money. They're in it for the care. But we're even seeing those now having to start wind down operations. So, you know, I know, Penny, you keep an eye on everything statewide. This is just a huge issue for the entire state, you know, all of rural and western Nebraska.
Yeah, it is. Actually, on weekly calls that I'm on, you know, we hear of other facilities who are struggling, and it's a constant question that's being raised, especially even with the calls on the Nebraska Healthcare Association. You know, they give us an update of every week as to where various facilities are standing. You know, and they've actually have reached out to us as facilities to contact our legislature and people, you know, at the state and even at the federal level to say, hey, get our stories out, because, you know, rural Nebraska is totally different than downtown New York type of thing. You know, we have our own set of issues that may or may not be heard out there.
Yeah. Well, Sean, you know, let's go to Monday's meeting, where as the board has really, in the last several months, been focusing on how do we improve the finances, how do we attract workforce. You know, every healthcare facility, whether it's a hospital, whether it's a clinic, whether it's an assisted living, whether it's a nursing home, is in somewhat of the same boat for staffing, and you're all competing for the same pool of employees unless you can attract people in from outside the area. But that stuff, because every facility in every part of the state and in the region and the country are trying to attract those same employees. So Monday, you kind of led the charge from the board standpoint to say, hey, we've got to do what we can to keep the facility open and operating until we can get to potentially a ballot question in November and let the voters decide whether they want to support the care center financially through a tax levy, which is not unique. You know, for instance, we every 4 years look at the Rock County hospital facility. That's the clinic, long-term care, pharmacy, and hospital there, and they get about every 4 years have to put on a ballot question for their voters to support hospital and long-term care operations through a property tax levy just next door at Rock County that passes every year. So that has not been the case here, but to get to that point, I know you've got to try to keep the doors open to let the people decide. Monday, you led the charge in the meeting to increase wages across the board for all the nursing positions to see, hey, even if we raise wages 30%, if we can land more employees that way, we're still saving a bundle of money compared to what we're having to pay agencies to staff these positions. So I know you guys have had some pretty good news just since Monday's meeting on that front.
Yeah, basically, by increasing the wages to 30% above what they are now, we create a wow factor. And basically, if you just we raise wages just a dollar above everybody else, it's really not going to be worth relocating or changing your position. But at 30% more, hopefully we'll draw in people that want to make more money, and it's a win-win because we're saving money and we're also keeping that money, returning it back to the community, to the grocery stores, to, you know, local businesses, everything. So it's a win-win regardless. And I believe since we come up with that plan, I believe it's been working.
Yeah, actually it has. A lot of interest starting on Tuesday. I've received a lot of phone calls inquiring, wanting to know, you know, is it true? You know, and yes, it is true. And through that process, we've actually hired a new CNA fresh out of passing her exam. So she will be starting with us as soon as all of her paperwork is complete. We actually have another CNA who resigned, is coming back. Part of that is due to the wage increases as well. We've also offered a referral bonuses to that. So our current staff member are reaching out to their whole Facebook, social media, their whole list, their little black books per se, and have gotten a lot of interest going there as well. So, you know, we've got the interest. We just need to make sure that it keeps going, that we get the staff to be committed to come back.
You know, and we look at it from every, let's just use CNA, for example, because that's the one you're hiring the most quickly. Between having even at these higher wages, having a staff member of your own as opposed to having an agency fill a full-time CNA position for a month, it's about a $5,000 difference.
Yes.
So for every position you added as a CNA that's an in-house employee, you're saving $5,000 to the bottom line. And on the nursing side, if it's an LPN or an RN, there's a potential for even more savings, yet still being very competitive with what you offer wage-wise, still being able to save a substantial amount of money from those agencies paying, you know, handling those positions.
That's correct.
You know, from the standpoint of nursing facilities, I know, Penny, you're tuned in, kind of plugged in throughout the state. Basically, these facilities that have closed, for the most part, you're seeing there's not a lot of in-house employees that lost their jobs. There were agency staff that were, like Valentine, for instance, was almost primarily agency staffing. You know, I know you picked up an employee or two when Mullen's facility closed, but as these facilities close, we're not seeing, oh, well, now there's another 15 or 20 CNAs, LPNs, RNs in the workforce pool that we can potentially draw from and recruit. No, it's just those agencies have one less door to knock on. And, you know, I look at it from, if I'm an agency and I am basically forcing all my customers to close, that's not a very good long-term plan. If you're an agency that, okay, all of these facilities that I work with are now closing because they can't afford to work with me, well, they're obviously not going to be using my services in the future. So it's just it's kind of a not a very good way to me to conduct your business, I guess. Well, you know, I know, Sean, for you as a board member and all the board members, the first and foremost goal is to try to find a way, whatever that way looks like, to keep the facility open, to keep the facility operating, trying to fix the staffing issues, and keeping your residents here. They've got the ties here. They've been here. You know, just talk. I wanted to have you kind of talk, personalize this a little bit for us in how you duties as a board member and what your goals are and what you're basically looking at when you're in these board meetings.
Basically, my whole goal in this thing is that I believe that there's got to be a solution, and we kind of have that solution. We're working towards it. One of my biggest fears is as all these small nursing homes are closing down around the state and no new ones are being built, that it's going to come down to a point where if we let these people go, where are they going to go? Or, you know, is it going to get to a point where eventually are these people going to be shipped to a different state? I mean, I personally know some of these people that are out there, and this is not fair. They have done their dues, done their time in this community, and basically it's going to come down to a point where these families are going to have to drive hours to see their loved ones, and Something's got to be figured out, and I think what we've got to do is we've got to pull together somehow as a community to at least get it to a vote so that all the people can, you know, basically vote their opinion and see where we go from there.
Well, you know, I think as we educate people on what's happening at the nursing home, why we're in the situation we're in as far as financially, and if there's basically a light at the end of the tunnel, you know, as far as voters looking at the issue on supporting the care center, I think if you just ask people yes or no, do you want to see a facility in the community, I think it's undoubtedly everybody's going to say yes. Now, what are the financial needs to keep that goal in place? But to have the light at the end of the tunnel, you know, to be able to go to those voters and say, look, for 3 or 4 years, we operated at break even or better. We were showing that the facility is viable. And now with more facilities around the area closing, should we be able to stay open? And show that, look, this is a long term, we're going to be open long term. This isn't we've got every few months, we've got to worry about where are we coming up with the funds to stay open. No, if we can show that through community support, we are going to be a long term open and operating facility that's received very high ratings from Department of Health and Human Services, that makes us more attractive to an even larger area as far as potentially drawing residents, which then builds and makes your bottom line better. And to see that start where the wage increases are already leading to hires of local staff in the CNA positions, if that can trickle upward to the LPNs and to the RNs, I think that's a very positive message to be able to take to voters when you're trying to put this on the ballot and say, please support us. If those voters can see there is progress being made, it's shown in the past, it can work financially, you get through the pandemic and moving forward, you would think at some point the industry-wide shortage of nursing will subside a bit as it's becoming more and more attractive for younger people to go into that field of nursing, whether it's a 2-year LPN license, whether it's the 4-year RN, whether it's the 30-day CNA training. When you can make a very livable and comfortable wage in one of those positions, supply and demand will take care of itself to the point where that nursing shortage will at some point ebb. And as a board and as the care center, if you can say, look, we were operating well before the pandemic, we're in trouble now, but if we can get the support of the community, it doesn't have to be a perpetual property tax, or it doesn't have to be a perpetual levy. If it's a levy to get us through to the end of the ramifications from the pandemic, the ramifications of the shortage in staffing, if we can get to the end of that tunnel, we can prove again that we'll be able to operate at break even or better and not be back asking all the time for more of that funding support. I think that's a very important message that you'd want to be able to show that you can show to voters.
And actually, I've took it upon myself to go and talk to many people, I'd say, you know, 20 to 30 different people, and about half of those were on the fence as far as how they would vote towards this levy until they got a little bit of education and I explained everything and how, you know, the pandemic is not only hurt nursing homes, it's hurt business all across the line, all across the nation. And every single person that I talked to at the end of our conversation were very behind paying a little bit more tax money towards the levy if it means keeping it here.
Yeah, and that's the message that I think has to continue to be, you know, pushed out there to folks is that, and I, you know, like they said to me, I'll just talk personally as a voter, you know, as a voter with, you know, paying a substantial amount of property tax, I've got to look at it as well. Am I paying this tax perpetually? Am I paying this tax just to kick this can down the road a year or 2 years? And at the end of that 2 years, we're still in the same situation. Whereas if I can be shown that, hey, this was working before, we had the pandemic, now we need the support. After that support, we can show that it's working again and we won't be back asking for that support all the time. That's a very different mindset just for me personally as I would go into a voting booth on a question of an additional property tax. And I don't feel like I'm alone in that scenario. I think there are a lot of property owners that would want that question asked, like, okay, if we're not just kicking this can down the road, and you're going to, you know, you're still going to be at the end of this levy period in the same financial condition that we are currently, then that's, that may be one answer for people to vote. But if you can show, all right, here's how it worked for 3-4 years, here's where we were financially, where we weren't even asking the city and the county for the $80,000 that they had already committed to providing. We weren't even asking them for that. But then we've had the pandemic, and now here's where we are. But with the increased wages, mm-hmm. with the referral bonuses, sign-on bonuses, some of the things you're doing to alleviate the egregious money that you're having to pay for agency staffing, if you can show voters, all right, we've got, we're going to be able to be out of this in a couple of years. We'll have, we'll be back to fully staffed. We'll have these positions in the community, living here, you know, frequenting, as you said, Sean, the businesses here. That, that becomes to me a completely different mindset for your, for your voters.
Well, in a perfect situation, the levy being a temporary thing, and then it is self-supportive. But in my personal opinion, this is where you've got to look at the big picture. And even if it takes the levy considerably longer, you know, at what point do we not owe it to the people who have built this community and have done nothing but, you know, they'd be, if 50 years ago, they would be fighting for the same thing. Now they're there, and I personally am okay if I have to pay that levy as a citizen for an extended period of time, whatever time that may be, to keep these people here. And I think there's a lot of people who would follow me on that, that we owe it to these people. These are residents, business owners, school teachers. I mean, they have every right to stay here, and we need to take care of them, because it's going to be eventually down the road where any of us could be in this situation. And, you know, if I'm there, I'm going to expect the same support from my community. You know, I'm in here fighting for you. I expect to be fought for, too, if I'm there. It needs to be. We need to look out for our own. That's one thing nice about a small community, is we group together and we take care of our own. This needs to happen now.
Yeah, and, you know, for those families that are in that situation, and for those residents, you know, being able to go through that situation together and at home in their community really means a lot. So I appreciate you guys. We're bumping into time, but anybody wants more information, or if you're interested in a career at the Sandhills Care Center, I know, Penny, they can talk to you out of the facility, and the number?
402-387-1294.
And Sean, you're one of the 5 board members of the Care Center, along with Phil Fuchs as the board chairman, Dr. Mel Campbell, Buddy Small from the Brown County Commissioners, and Tom Jones are the 5 board members on the Care Center, and along with the commissioners and the city council, who jointly operate the facility. So if you want your if you want your voice heard, if you want to give your opinion, just reach out to your local elected officials or to one of those 5 Care Center board members. I'm sure they'd be happy to talk to you if you've got questions ahead of potentially a vote that might be coming up on this issue. You know, reach out and then ask those folks questions. If you've got questions that, I know, Sean, for you, it doesn't matter if they're tough questions. Doesn't matter if they're hard questions to answer. You know what? I know you're willing, and all the board are, to have that conversation.
Absolutely. And, you know, anybody can call me anytime. My number is 402-382-8093. And I'll help in any way I can to answer your questions.
Sean, Penny, appreciate the time. We're at our Opal 9 program. We're going to jump into World News at 10 o'clock.